Episode of the AdDrop podcast and continue our series. We look at the Washington State Cougars. Tonight's guest is a beat writer for CougFan.com, Jamie Vinnick. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, anytime, anytime. Now, people, explain the vibe of football on the Palouse and why it is special.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's, you know, for those unfamiliar with Pullman, Washington, it's a small college town, and the you know, the town kind of revolves around the football team. It's almost like what you would see in a small town that revolves around its high school football. I mean, everything kind of revolves around Washington State football, and then, you know, when the basketball teams are good, the same is true with that. So, you know, everything's pretty much closed on Saturdays for the games, you know, really until post game, and it's, you know, it's a daily event. You know, when it's Cougar football Saturday, you know, you've got people up at 8 or 9, you know, the bars are usually open in the mornings. It'll close for the games themselves. And people are, you know, they're drinking and they're partying from pretty much the crack of dawn until they go to bed. It's kind of it's a whole event when it's a football, a home game on a Saturday. And, you know, it just kind of speaks to the culture of that. It's, you know, when you're in Pullman, you know, you're not going home for the weekend. You're not going into the big cities. You know, you're there. That's kind of where you are. And, you know, you'll go home every now and then, but it's not a school where, oh, it's the weekend, I'm going home to see my parents. You're there. You're in the dorms. You're in your fraternity. You're in your apartment. You know, it's so out there that it kind of helps build a tight knit community because of how unique it is in terms of its location.
Now, Mike Leach came to Pullman and kind of captivated not just the eastern part of the state, but the Pac-12 in general. What, if any, are still any holdovers or influence that the former coach still has at Washington State?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing that Leach did is he kind of instilled life back into the football program, and, you know, he gave people a reason to go to the games. I mean, leading up to Leach, it had been a lot of very bad years of football, a lot of, you know, bad years under Paul Wolf and even towards the end of Bill Dova. And even early on in Leach's tenure, you know, two of his first 3 years, he won 3 games and the other year won 6 and went to a bowl. But that was at that time gospel for Washington State because they hadn't done it in a decade. But as he kind of built the program, you know, it went from, oh, they'll have 15,000 people at a game to, you know, they're selling out games. You know, it's packed from, you know, from the top of the railings all the way, or top of the bleachers all the way down. You know, you had the high profile games like a USC, like an Oregon. And so I think there is still remnants of that culture where people nowadays, you know, are far more interested in going to the games because he built a culture of winning. And then I think he also showed that what you need to do to win at this school is be unique, and you can't run a pro style or a spread offense because Washington State will just never be able to recruit that kind of talent. They won't get the offensive linemen. They won't be able to get the running backs and the wide receivers. So you have to do things a little differently, and I think that's why the air raid worked so well the first time he was here, and I think that's, you know, the hope is that the variation of it will work this time, is just because you have to run a unique offense. You can't run one of your standard NFL style, or even what an Alabama or an Ohio State can run. You just can't run that at Washington State because you just can't get those type of athletes.
Now, explain the departure of Mick Bolovich and the transition to Jake Dicker. What was the atmosphere before the switch, the mood after this, how was the switch met, and the mood after the mood of the fandom afterward? Like, what is, and how do the two coaches differ?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a wild time, you know, when Rolovich releases his statement in July saying that he's not vaccinated and that he's not going to meet today. It was met with a lot of uproar, and, you know, there were people in full support of him, and then there were people who were not. You know, Washington State fan base is kind of divided on that side of things. You know, there's a lot of people who live on the western side of the state of Washington, which is a very liberal area, and then there's a lot of people who live on, you know, the eastern side of the state, which is a very conservative area. So it was a very split reaction, and it was kind of the same when it was announced that, you know, everyone had to be in compliance with this vaccine mandate. And I think the feeling was for a while is that at first it was, okay, he's going to take a shot, and he's going to do what he needs to do to coach the team, mostly because that's what he continued to say. But I think as it neared the date, you know, it was obviously the biggest storyline around the program from that moment in July until he left. And that was the conversation is, you know, what's going to happen. It was, as much as people wanted to pay attention to the football team, there was this uncertainty of, you know, how long is the head coach even going to be there? And then I think after you had a lot of similar reactions, you had a lot of people, you know, outraged at the fact that, that he was fired for this, you know, for not being in compliance. People who blamed the athletic director, they blamed the president, and people who blamed, you know, the governor of Washington State as well, Jay Inslee. But then people who also, you know, thought it was, that this is what had to be done because, you know, it was a mandate set into place. And it was a very, it divided the fan base in a very big way. Probably the most it had since maybe the early years of Leach, where, you know, there was some controversy always around Leach. And again, in that same category, some of his political views where half the fan base likes it, half the fan base doesn't like it. But it certainly, it split the fan base in a lot of ways. But I do think a lot of people were able to kind of rally around Jake Dickert. And I think him being as personal and likable as he is probably helped with that.
In hindsight, the move from Coach Rolovich to Coach Dickert actually worked out for the fan. You have a younger coach in Dickert who worked his way up. I think he started at Wisconsin-Stevens Point and kind of grinded from Augustana to Wyoming. And he, you know, from the age of 24, he's about 38 now. So he is putting the work as somebody who's only 38 years old. You said he's likable. I've seen interviews. He just comes across as a genuine person who literally wants to be in Pullman. Have you found that too?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that struck us all when we first talked to Jake, you know, and the first time you could really get media availability was the 2021 season. Obviously, COVID in 2020 made it really hard to talk to him. But I think the first thing you notice is just how smart he is in terms of everything to do with football. I mean, he's a guy who played wide receiver in college, so he knows the offensive side of the game, but obviously was brought up as a defensive mind. And I think he's kind of the guy that is the perfect balance between what Leach was and what Rolovich was in terms of a coach. You know, Leach was very hard on his players, you know, was referred to by some as a dictator, and it was Leach's way or the highway. There was no middle ground. There was no negotiation. He was in charge and things were done his way. He didn't like it, find a different program to play for. He would not bend. Rolovich was the opposite. He was a very lenient players coach, you know, maybe to a fault at times, and where players could, I don't want to say get away with things, but there was some, you know, there wasn't a lot of tough love. There was a lot more of, you know, a guy kind of, you know, would maybe do something and they would turn a bit of a blind eye to it. Dickert's probably the middle ground where he's not quite as intense as Leach was. You know, he's not going to sit in press conferences and blame his players, or he's not going to, you know, be completely shut off from suggestions or help, but he's also not going to be lenient like maybe Rolovich was at times. You know, it's still going to be a strict rules and strict culture, but it's the one that he thinks that you have to build. And especially with the transfer portal, if you let guys kind of just run free and kind of do what they want, you'll have guys transferring out of the program every year. You kind of have to build a culture around guys that want to be in Pullman for 5 years, want to be in Pullman, you know, for their college careers, and aren't just going to, you know, have one good year and then bolt for whoever's paying the most NIL money or whatever school has the flashiest brand in terms of a transfer portal.
Now, moving to the offense, I want to talk about Cameron Ward. He's a guy from Incarnate Word. Oh, Lord. It is a whole bunch of words and words, but he came to Pullman from the transfer portal, and he looks like he's going to jump into the starting role. Of the last few Washington State quarterbacks you had with Gardner Minshew and folks like that, how does Ward stack up, and what excites you most about his game coming to the Pullman?
Yeah, I think with Cam, he's different than, you know, a lot of the last guys. I mean, really dating back to Luke Falk, who kind of started this run of great quarterbacks. And he's certainly more mobile than Falk. I mean, that's not necessarily hard to do. Luke will be the first to tell you that he was about as immobile as a quarterback could be. I think there's some Minshew to him. I think he's a little more of an off-script guy than Minshew was. You know, Minshew could certainly make plays off-script, but I think Ward more thrives off that. Definitely more mobile and better at that than Anthony Gordon. And then I think the big thing that separates him from Jaden Delora is just his arm strength. And that was really the big knock that was always on Jaden, is that he just, you know, he couldn't stretch the field as much as they liked at times because he didn't have the elite arm strength. But, you know, just watching Ward in spring, you know, the first thing you notice are those off-script plays, and that you know, he'll scramble out of the pocket and it looks like he's going to go chuck the ball into the sideline. Instead, he suddenly finds someone over the middle for a completion. And it's the little things, and it's something that, you know, Patrick Mahomes has made, you know, so, you know, people rave about him for that, and many other things with Mahomes. And, you know, I don't know if it's a coincidence that Eric Morris coaches Ward and coached Mahomes as well. And it's the type of thing that you have to be able to do as a quarterback, but you have to have the IQ to do it as well. You know, to know when it's time to throw the ball away, but also to know when it's time that, hey, there's an opening here. I can actually turn this into something. Ward has that. And I think that's what's going to help make him so dynamic is the fact that if he's flushed out of the pocket, and he might be flushed out of the pocket because the offensive line is a question mark for Washington State, but there is enough of a skill set and an IQ and just an overall intelligence to, you know, to be able to identify the right move and the right decision kind of in a flash.
Now, if we go to the backfield, we have Nakia Watson, who is taking over from one of my favorite backs, which is Max Borden, because of the versatility. Watson, I think he's a Wisconsin transfer, is a bigger back, about 227, 228. How does that change what you think that the offense is going to look like?
Yeah, I think right now running back, it's kind of with offensive line. It's a big question mark. And, you know, there's proof that Nakia Watson can run the ball, and he did so at Wisconsin, and he even did so a little bit last year. But with the air raid coming back, so much of that offense is catching the ball out of the backfield, and that's not necessarily his game. And then their number two back, Juvenski Schlunbaker, a true freshman from Bellingham, about 2 hours north of Seattle, he's kind of in the same mold. Physical back, downhill runner, but not so much a pass catcher. The guy that probably is going to factor in is Jalen Jenkins, another true freshman from Allen, Texas, but he's about 5'8", 195 pounds, and actually I think I'm overshooting the weight there, probably closer to about 175. He's the pass catching back, and I think he's a guy that is going to see time on the field as a true freshman. Now, they're still going to want to develop Watson and Schlunbaker as pass catching backs because those are going to be the two feature running backs in terms of, you know, getting carries and running downhill in between the tackles. But I think it's going to be a very unique way in which they utilize the running backs out of the backfield. You know, it wasn't something they did utilize in the run and shoot. It frustrated a lot of fans that Max Borden didn't get 70 to 75 catches like he probably should have. But they also, none of these backs are quite like what Borden was, or even what James Williams and Jamal Mora were. They're just not pure pass catching backs yet. I think there's the potential to develop them into that. But right now, the way I see it is, you know, Watson and Schlunbaker will get the carries. But when they need pass catching, Jenkins is probably going to get, you know, a handful of touches to the point where you're playing probably two true freshmen are going to get, probably break that redshirt threshold and get pretty significant snaps.
Now, on the outside, do you think this is a time where DeJuan Stribling will be the go-to guy? He had 5 touchdowns as a freshman. Or do you see him being a complimentary piece? And if so, which receiver will step up and be the number one?
I think it'll be kind of somewhere between that. I think it'll be better than a complimentary piece. The thing about the go-to piece in an offense like the air raid is it's usually a slot guy, unless you have a receiver like what Washington State used to have in Gabe Marks, where, you know, he sets every Pac-12 receiving record. I do think the guys that are going to get the bulk of the targets just because of how the offense is designed are going to be Lincoln Victor and Renard Bell in the slots. But I do think Stribling is going to be their quote-unquote best receiver, their best big play receiver, their best guy to when you need a catch, when you need a deep ball. You know, when you need 15 yards, that's who you go to. You know, Victor and Bell will rack up the 7-yard catches and, you know, get them into second and manageable and third and manageable and so on. But Stribling, I think, is going to be the overall superstar of that group, whereas Victor and Bell will be probably – they may have the, you know, the gaudier numbers just in terms of receptions, but I think Stribling will probably have the yards and the touchdowns. But, no, he will take a big stride. I don't know about the go-to guy yet just because – especially in this offense, it gets spread around so much, but he will definitely be beyond a complimentary piece.
Now, you mentioned the offensive line issue. There's a Northern Colorado transfer named Grant Stevens. How big a role do you think he'll play? Do you think he can anchor at this point?
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing about Stevens is from the time that he signed with Wazoo back in May, the expectation was he was going to play right tackle, which is where he played in Northern Colorado and was all Big Sky at doing that. You know, talking to Jake Dicker just a week ago, he actually says Stevens is going to be at right guard. So they'll keep Maake Fifita at right tackle Jarrett Kingston will be at left tackle, and they'll have Connor Gomez at center. That kind of leaves left guard as that big question, whether that be Roderick Taylor-Vea or Brock Dew or Christian Hilborn. In terms of Stevens, though, I do think he's going to be a good veteran presence because it is still a very young line. Fita and Gomez have started games, but it was really only last year. Kingston's the most experienced, but he's on the other side of the line. So I think adding a veteran like Stevens who's played, who has experience, who has starting experience, I think that'll be a big boost to that right side, and it'll kind of help Fita come along a little bit too as he settles into that right tackle spot.
Now, in the air raid, there's really no tight ends, but do you think that there'll be like a modified version where you might see a tight end or two, or will they be strictly air raid this season?
Yeah, so they did bring back tight ends. The first time in over 10 years there will be tight ends. It's going to be the air raid, but it's going to be more of a modernized version. So more of what you maybe see Cliff Kingsbury run at Oklahoma, at Texas Tech, and now with the Arizona Cardinals. And then the same thing with Lincoln Riley. It's going to be more of what that is versus Mike Leach four wide every play. So there will be tight ends. They won't be heavily involved yet, I don't think. Probably a couple targets a game here and there, mainly used for blocking. But there will be tight ends in this offense, which is a change from what Leach ran. It is more towards that modern air raid, even to what Graham Harrell ran at USC last year. So they'll use tight ends. There will be a little bit more of a run game. It'll be a little different, but still a lot of the air raid concepts.
Now, when we come back from break, I want to talk about the defense because I'm actually excited about the Washington State defense because of what they have up front and the havoc they can wreak. But that is after break. You're listening to the AdDrop Podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with AdDrop Podcast, Terrence Biggs, Jamie Vinnick, beat writer for CoopsFan.com. Jamie, the edge rushers from Washington State are exciting to me because, one, there's two of them. You have Ron Stone and Britton Jackson. This year, do you see one of them kind of taking like the mantle as the best pass rusher on the team, or do you think that because they're talented? And which tackles do you think will give them support in the middle?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as good as both were last year in terms of Stone and Jackson, I do think Ron Stone was kind of the a little bit above Brennan Jackson, and certainly not an indictment on Brennan, but just more of how good Stone was. I mean, a first-team All-Pac-12 player, 11.5 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks, a guy who really changed the entire pass rush for the Cougars. I mean, the most dominant pass rusher they've had since Hercules Mata'afa. And a lot of what Stone did probably wasn't even statistical. I mean, getting quarterback hurries and flushing quarterbacks, and that was maybe even where Jackson was better, is Jackson probably had 3 to 4 almost sacks where he gets to a quarterback, he gets them out of the pocket and forces a throwaway or an interception. But I do think Stone is probably just a step above Jackson. But that said, I mean, that's still two, in my opinion, the best Pac-12 or the best edge duo in the Pac-12 are those two. As for the interior, you know, it is a question mark still of can someone kind of emerge as that guy or those two guys. You know, they had a lot of decent guys last year. They didn't really have a star. I know, you know, Jake Dickert's high on Antonio Poulet and Christian Mejia as being those guys, with Amir Crowder and Amir Mujahid kind of serving as depth. But then the other guy to factor in is Deucey Malani, transferred from Virginia. He's more of a pass-rushing defensive tackle, probably a guy that is a change-of-pace tackle rather than your classic run-stuffer. But I think a lot of their success on the defensive line will depend on can two of those guys take the next step and be closer to, you know, they don't have to be All-Americans, but, you know, closer to what an All-Pac-12 defensive tackle will look like. Even just having one of those guys, I think, would help a lot because if you look at a lot of the games where Washington State struggled, it was when they couldn't stop the run and when teams would run it down their throats, games like Oregon, BYU, even Central Michigan. So I think if defensive tackle is probably a situation where if I had to bet, Mejia and Poulet probably start, but they're going to need some strides from those guys that go beyond, oh, they've looked really good in camp or they've looked good in practice, you know, to show that on the field of being top-tier tackles.
Now, if you look past the rush, you have Dion Henley and Jordan Meek with a transfer from Nevada. What do you think they will bring to the
concept of the Cougars defense, and how excited are you to see so many players, either pass rushers or guys who can cover or guys who can start smacking our running backs? Like, this defense is not your, doesn't look like it'll be your typical Washington State defense where the offense does the lion's share and the defense just has to hold the fort. What do you like about this defense?
Yeah, so just in regard to Henley and Lee, I think, you know, they're two guys that come in and they're, you know, they're beyond stopgap, so that was kind of one of their big things is, you know, Washington State loses both their linebackers and both their safeties last year, so Brian Ward brings in two players he's very familiar with. You know, they kind of fill in so they don't have to replace that on the fly. Now, granted, Henley, in my opinion, was the most impressive player in spring football for Washington State. He can cover receivers. He can, you know, get to the line. He can come off the edge. He can do a lot of different things. He's a lot different of a linebacker than Washington State's had in a long time. Lee started slow in the spring, and he even said that himself, and then really got going. You know, both guys just kind of have a nose for the football. Washington State's MO on defense last year was forcing turnovers, and Lee was actually one of the leaders in forced fumbles and fumble recoveries last year. Henley had four interceptions. He recovered some fumbles. So those are two guys that I think kind of fit the identity and the mold of what they want on the defense. In terms of excitement, I think the pass rush is going to be better. You know, the one thing that, you know, that was a gripe of the coaching staff about the pass rush was they only had 21 sacks. That was 106 in the nation, nowhere near what it should be considering that level of talent. And then I think, you know, the big questions do come in. Can they replace what they lost in the secondary? Lee will help replace what they lost at strong safety. But there is a lot of questions at free safety where they lost George Hicks. They don't really have a clear-cut guy right now. Sam Lockett had a good summer in kind of reshaping his body. He might be the leader right now. And then they have to replace Jalen Watson at cornerback, who was one of the better shutdown corners in the pack. So I think the excitement is, you know, Washington State's defense has long been a weakness, really up until Dickert got here. And I think for once, part of the excitement is that it actually should be a strength, and it should be something where, you know, when the defense is on the field, you're not praying for a stop. You're hoping for a stop or expecting a stop because of kind of what they have shown and just the talent they have on that defense, especially at the edge position.
Now, the schedule, and I did a quick little glance at it and did a little deeper dive after it. Are 8 wins a possibility?
Yeah, I do think they are. I mean, I think that they're kind of looking at probably between 6 and 8 wins. Just kind of depends on how they do in some of the tough Pac-12 road games. I mean, I think they're pretty safe bets to beat Idaho and Colorado State. I like their chances at home against Arizona State and Cal. And then, you know, you fill in kind of the rest of the wins. Do they probably get Arizona and Stanford? I think there's a good chance of that. They've had a lot of success against Stanford. I think there's a lot of hope that they will win the Apple Cup again this year, you know, being back at home. And then, it, you know, to get to that 8th, can they steal one? Can they get Oregon State, who they've beaten 8 straight years on the road? Can they somehow get one against Oregon, who should be a good team, or Utah? Not putting a whole lot of faith into them going down and beating USC or Wisconsin, but there are, I think, a lot of potential wins for that 8th win this year.
Now, when I look at the Pac-12, you have USC and UCLA moving to the Big Ten. What do you think the future holds for the Cougars? Are they going to stay in the Pac-12, or are they going to be looking to find a home elsewhere, in your opinion?
Well, I think that is the million-dollar question kind of going around Pullman right now is what does come next. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk, you know, the Big 12 potentially merging with the Pac-12, the Pac-12 staying together as a Pac-10, the Pac-10 adding to Mountain West teams. And then, you know, the theory that gets tossed around a lot is that the rest of the Pac-12 will go their separate ways. And, you know, Washington State, just because of the lack of brand and lack of national recognition they have, might end up in the Mountain West. And I think that's the worst case scenario in a lot of ways for Washington State. And I think that the goal right now of President Kirk Schultz and Athletic Director Pat Chun are to find a way for that not to happen, whether that means keeping the pack together or getting Wazoo into the Big 12. I think that the way that they lose big in all this is that they have to drop down a level to the Mountain West. You know, I think that, you know, they're towards the lower end of the Power 5 schools in terms of, you know, in finances and resources and in location, but they're still above, you know, all in all those things are still above where a Mountain West school lies. So I do think that that is kind of the fear and the hope, I think, is that they can keep this Pac-12 together with maybe adding a San Diego State or adding a Boise State and just kind of go from there. But, you know, if other teams start poking around, Washington and Oregon and so on, I do think there will be some aggressiveness from, you know, from the factor, from the, you know, the upper campus and the athletic department to make sure that they aren't left in the dust and that if, you know, that they will find a place for them, you know, that they can still succeed and still maintain a brand.
What do you have coming up on CoopFan.com?
So mainly right now we'll be covering Pac-12 Media Day tomorrow on Friday. And then, you know, fall camp starts up on August 3rd for Washington State. So that's just in a few days, and that's going to be kind of the big thing coming and just, you know, seeing who what the position battles look like and what the full team looks like now that they've got all the freshmen on campus, a few more transfers. So that's kind of the big thing to be looking for at Coug Fan is just the daily spring free or the daily fall camp reviews and kind of recaps.
How can people interact with you on social media?
They can find me at Jamie Vinick 9. That's JameyVinnick9, and the number 9 on Twitter. Instagram is the same, although Twitter is definitely my primary point of social media.
Jamie Vinick from CougFan.com. Thank you so much for joining us on the Ad Drop podcast. We definitely will check in this season because I think the Cougs are going to be one of those teams that, because of the pass rush, because of Ward at quarterback, definitely want to watch. We definitely will check in throughout the season.
Awesome. Appreciate you having me on.
This has been another episode of the Ad Drop podcast.